Today, we're thrilled to have Kyle Tweeter on the show, the owner of L Furniture Warehouse, one of my favorite cheap and cheerful spots that has a recipe I believe many restaurants can learn from. With 19 locations across Canada and one in Seattle, Kyle has a wealth of experience scaling his business nationwide. We're about to dive into his journey, the lessons learned along the way, and the unique strategies that have driven his success. Welcome to Guest Getter, the best place for restaurateurs to learn the art and science of getting more new guests, getting guests coming back more often, and getting guests spending more per visit so that you can be more profitable and do more of what you love. My name's Kyle Guilfoyle. Let's hit it. Kyle, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thumbs up. Yep, good stuff.
Awesome. Okay, I'd love to begin by asking you a pretty broad question. What's one thing you wish you had learned years ago?
There's been a lot. I've been doing this now, I think, for 23 years. Probably most importantly is to ride the highs and lows of going through the whole process. It's not getting too up when business is doing really well and not getting too low when business kind of goes down. This whole thing really is a process. And at some points in my career doing this, I felt like I was failing. And other points in the last 20 years, I felt like I was doing really well. But you just got to ride that wave and realize that you're doing what you love. And it's a fun thing that we're, you know, lucky to be able to do. And you just enjoy the ride.
Awesome. Love that. Yeah. Speaking of doing what you love, you've been at this a while. I'd love to hear the Cliff's Notes story, the backstory about how you got to where you are today.
That sounds good. I won't bore you too much or go back too far, but I'll pick up with finding a mentor. So I stumbled across this book when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and there was a section of that book that just really stood out to me. And it was to find the person who's the most successful at what you want to do and the city that you want to live in. And basically just try to get a hold of them and see if they'd be interested in mentoring you at all. I had spent my 19th birthday at the Roxy in Vancouver, which is Vancouver's most popular nightclub and arguably still is today, and found out that it was owned by Granville Entertainment Group and a guy named Blaine Culling. So this was before internet. So I was in the yellow pages and trying to find his number. And eventually I did get through to him and pitched him on why he should help mentor me and teach me and help me on this sort of journey that I'd seen myself going on. And at first he was a little reluctant, but I kept pestering him for quite a while. And then finally he agreed to do that. Yeah. I started working for an entertainment group and his various establishments. And I cycled through a lot of positions inside of his company, from bus guy to I helped manage promotions at one of his clubs. I was a bar back. I was a bartender. And the last role I had with him was as a server. I did maintenance. He just kept cycling me through different roles until he thought that maybe I'd learned enough about the business to try doing one on my own. So
I'm curious, what was it that you saw in what he had built that you admired the most, that you were like, what that guy has, I'd like to have?
Yeah, just the whole social aspect to the business was really inspiring to me. I just knew that that was something I could really get into and be passionate about.
Awesome. I love that. And I think I totally agree. Find someone who has done what you want to do, not only just one time, but someone who's done it again and again and again. I think that's probably the most reliable source of any advice or mentorship.
Yeah, there's no chance I could do what I do now or even have started without him. Like an interesting story about Blaine is one of the roles I had was renovating his bars when they needed renovations. So when we did do renovations for him, he was a bit of a hoarder. So he never threw anything out. So when we renovated one of his places, all of his old stuff went to this really big warehouse. So when I went to open my first place, I didn't have any money really to speak of to start my own place. But he gave me the keys to that warehouse, told me to take whatever I needed. And when I made money, I could pay him for it. And the first three bars that I opened were with his old stools and table bases and
amazing
kitchen equipment. And yeah, it was really
amazing. And so then how did that, I'd love to hear about how you segued from working under his umbrella businesses to then going out on your own and starting L Furniture Warehouse.
Yeah, even pre-L Furniture Warehouse, the first one that I opened was called The Loose Moose in Vancouver, just off of Granville on Nelson. And I ended up opening that with two of my buddies that I worked with in the last job that I had for Blaine, the restaurant called Poghorns. And at that place, I was the waiter. My partner in what was to be The Moose was Luke Baxter, and he was a bartender at that previous spot. And the third guy was really passionate about music, and he was the DJ there. I don't know, we just put our heads together and thought of this idea of opening our own spot where one would DJ, one would bartend, I'd be the server. Our friends would come in and yeah, we just try to start a business that way.
Amazing. Yeah. But before we go on, I always like asking this question, which is what's one thing most people don't know about restaurant ownership and growth? What's one thing most people don't know, but they probably should?
Like, I have a theory on why so many fail, and it's tied into probably the most valuable lesson. And that's that most people that get into this business, it's because they're really passionate about food or people or the experience. Most people forget that it's a restaurant business, and the business part is probably more important than even the restaurant side of it. So yeah, I'm fortunate enough, the creative-minded person, but I have a partner who's the opposite, and he's very business-driven and business-motivated, and it's tying those two things together that really allow you to be successful. It doesn't matter how good your food is or how great the room looks. If you don't understand labor costs and food costs and taxes, and you're eventually going to find yourself in a lot of trouble. So
definitely. Do you know the book, The E-Myth Revisited?
No, I'll check it out though.
It's basically about a baker who loves baking, and then they go into the baking business, and it just goes over the struggles of being a technician and how being a baker is a completely different skill set from building and growing a business. And yeah, and so it's just a great book that teaches you how to structure business, like operationally, the different roles you have to have, et cetera, et cetera. And so what you said there just really reminded me of a core message from that book, which is, yeah, phenomenal book. So I'd love to, would you be able to give us a bit of a 30,000 foot view of where L Furniture Warehouse is at today? Anything you're willing to share, just tell us a bit about it. I'll probably share some of my own experiences there, because I do think you guys have what seems to me to be a really winning formula. And I just love to hear you take us through where the business is at. And yeah.
So right now we have 19 locations, aside from one in Seattle, all in Canada. They're from Quebec City to Victoria in British Columbia. I'd say there's 1,200 employees now. Yeah. And it's awesome. Yeah, it's been a really fun journey. Actually, our first location outside of, so we started in Vancouver with the warehouse on Granville Street and expanded inside BC. And our first store outside of BC was in Quebec City. A little opposite, I think, of what most people do when they're growing, but worked for us.
Yeah. I'd love to speak to that, because I imagine there are a number of restaurant owners listening to this who have a location, maybe two. And the idea of having 19 of them is probably a little bit mind-boggling. What would you say to that restaurant owner who maybe has just one location, and they're keen to grow it, to scale it up the way that you have? What would you say to that restaurant owner?
Just to keep in mind that you can't be everywhere at once, especially like with us being all across the country. I certainly can't. And even when you get to two or three, it's really difficult to have your eyes on everything. So having people that you trust running those stores and inside of your system that you can rely on is definitely the most important thing. And I think just as important is understanding that not everybody knows everything that's inside your head. And assuming that they do is going to be a pretty costly mistake. So it's really important to have documented all the different processes that you think are the most important to what's made you successful, so that someone else can pick that up and help carry you to the next level, because it's not something you can do alone.
Yeah, totally. It's like you have to have a recipe or a formula, and it has to be well documented so that you can have other people implement things for you, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'd love to touch on the growth engine, or what that recipe is for L Furniture Warehouse. And before we get into that, I'd love to just share a little bit of my experience and my perception of the business. And that is, the first time I went to an L Furniture Warehouse was in Victoria, BC, and I'd never heard of it. I think it had just recently opened. It was a few years ago. I remember sitting there and being like, okay, these guys have something figured out. And what really struck me is it occurred to me that you used pricing on your menu as a tool, as an attractor, and everything seemed really affordable, and drinks were a standard price, but like you'd just order food with reckless abandon because it's just like, oh, it's $5 nachos. I'd be stupid not to. And then the other thing is that the environment was captivating. Like I was like, oh, these guys are masters at capturing attention in a way. And so you'd have really fun music, and then there'd also be TVs playing like music videos, like cool lights. The environment was just cool. And so it occurred to me that you not only had magnetic pricing that had me ordering more stuff, but also the environment kept me there. And so I thought to myself, these guys must have pretty high dwell times where people are like ordering a lot of stuff. But when they leave, they're not feeling like there's a huge hole in their pocket, even if they spend good money, because they're getting a lot of the perception of value is really reasonable and good. And so that just to me seemed like a winning recipe or formula for that made it so that I imagine the business relative to other restaurants, it probably always feels like you have a bit of a wind at your back. Like it's pretty straightforward to grow. I don't pretend that there haven't been struggles. I'm sure there have been, but like it probably just grew almost I know you invest in all kinds of things, marketing, blah, 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 but just compared to so many restaurant owners where it's like they're banging their head against the wall. They're always like, we got to increase our prices. And then anyways, that's my perception of the recipe. I'd love to hear straight from the horse's mouth what that recipe is.
It's really funny. It goes back to what I said about not getting too down when business isn't looking great. And two of the key things that you touched on were born out of necessity. So that first point about our value-driven pricing, that wasn't something that we started the business model with. We were priced like every other restaurant. Our issue and where we came up against a very strong brick wall was that we were operating very much like a bar. In British Columbia, you had two different and still have two different liquor licenses, the food primary and the liquor primary. And we were getting in a lot of trouble for operating like a liquor primary with a food primary license. One of the rules when you have that food primary is that food has to be your focus. We were having a really difficult time getting the customers we had to order food. So we put our heads together and thought, how can we get people to order food so that we keep our license? And that's when we came up with the idea, well, what if we make it so cheap that people would be crazy not to order food? And that's where that menu started from. And that's really been the catalyst to our growth today. And then when you talk about the environment and the decor, again, that was just something that was born out of necessity. Like I said, neither my partner or I started with money. So we had to find creative ways to build the room in a way that was affordable, still really inviting and really cool. Like I remember the first warehouse that we built, we went to do the wall fixtures. And again, there was no budget. There was no money to do that. We ended up driving up and down the alleys around Vancouver collecting pallets. We just broke down the pallets. And that was the wood that we used to do the wall treatments and all the walls. So yeah, it just all came from necessity and became what it is today.
And would you mind going into detail around how growth has happened? Is it truly just because of that kind of recipe where it just grows and grows? Or have there been marketing initiatives that you feel have been consistently effective? And on the other hand, I'm also curious about what you feel has totally flopped.
So on the growth side, it's been truly organic. And it really was how you described it. It just flowed and happened. Like I said, our first spot outside of British Columbia was in Quebec City. And it's because we'd fostered such great talent inside of our restaurants. And we had a general manager at our store in Whistler who was from Quebec and wanted to move back to Quebec City. He was really confident that this concept would work out there. Dan and I, my partner and I, weren't eager to expand into Quebec, but he was so good. We thought, well, we at least need to go and take a look. So we flew out to Quebec with him thinking, you know, there's no chance that we're actually going to do this. And sure enough, he showed us a city. We got into the vibe. We found a location on that first trip out there and we just knew it would work. But probably more importantly, none of it would have happened without Dom, that operating partner who motivated us to go to that city. That one ended up working out really well. It's still there and does extraordinarily well. And that's a philosophy and a process that we've kept on with. So in every city that we've gone to, it's been the person first and the city second. Mm-hmm. So when we have someone inside of our system who's passionate about what we're doing and wants to grow with us, we align ourselves with what their goals are and where they want to be. And yeah, grow from there. So it's the person first, the location second.
Oh yeah, it makes sense. Just aligning those incentives, can't really go wrong. And yeah, just, I'd love to just jam a little bit on marketing. Cause when we were on a call, you did mention that you invest quite a bit. And I'm just curious, what in your view is a healthy marketing mix to just keep generating new attention, new customers in a local marketplace? I'd just love to hear a bit about that. And I'm curious just cause I feel like every restaurant owner I speak with, there's always something they've done that has totally flopped. And I'd love if you could share a little bit about that too.
Sure. On a marketing side, it's been relatively new for us. I'd say just in the last 3 years, we've made a more concentrated effort to create a budget for that purpose. So yes, right now we do have a marketing department and they've been really focused on social media. There's two sort of pieces to that. One, I do think it's extremely valuable and it's really important for the culture that you're trying to build inside the store. And I think we've done a really good job of presenting who we are through imagery. I think it helps a lot with recruitment and it helps keep all the stores tied together to one anchor point. So on that side, I think it's been really good. Different marketing strategies that we've tried that I think have been a failure is when we deviate from consistency. We've certainly in the past, over the last 23 years, any other restaurants do it and other bars do it where they'll start a karaoke night or a trivia night or when you're looking for that immediate bump in sales, it tends to cost you in the long run because you're not offering that same consistent product. So if a person comes in on the Monday, you happen to be doing karaoke, their impression is that you are a karaoke bar and they might not want to come back on the Friday because they're not into karaoke or they come in on Friday hoping it's karaoke and now it's trivia. So it can get really muddy that way. Yeah, in-store promotions from a marketing perspective have been really important. to growing our business, but keeping them inside the borders of the consistency creates what we think is a warehouse experience.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. In fact, I feel like the big problem with the way most restaurant owners approach marketing in general is it's a very piecemeal approach. They'll try a little shiny object here or a tactic there, and there often isn't that full-fledged long-term commitment and consistency behind it. And I find that all the gold comes from that long-term committed, consistent approach. So yeah, I think.
And I think for us too, we get really caught up on what's happening inside the store, and getting outside of that bubble is just not something that certainly I'm a specialist in. And most of the people that are involved in store operations, that's not where their strength lies. So it's been a bit of a, I wouldn't say a struggle for us, but a pretty steep learning curve trying to figure out where the value is inside of marketing in a way that can benefit our business. So that's a journey that we're on now.
Yeah, 100%. And it's often a black box, right? People just feel like they're pouring money into it and it's unclear what they're getting back for it. And I mean, that kind of triggered my obsession with marketing. I was doing all the things that the gurus would tell you to do, and I was being paid pretty well for it too. And then I just didn't see the returns coming in the cash out night in, night out. And so it just felt like one big scam. Are we all being just a veil being pulled over our eyes? And so that's really what triggered my obsession, which is finding out what actually works.
Yeah, I think on a marketing side, there's marketing strategies that you can take that really solidify your brand relevance. And then there's a marketing approach that'll actually bring dollars through the door. And I don't think that those two things are the same thing. Whereas a lot of people in our industry, and certainly we did for a number of years, think that they were the same. And you need two distinct approaches if you want results on both ends of that spectrum.
Direct response marketing is stuff like, what's maybe you're extending an offer, something where you can really hold every dollar accountable and it's very trackable. Whereas the brand stuff, the storytelling stuff, yeah, that's harder to quantify an ROI for, but it tends to be more valuable over the long run of the business. And so direct response is like high value today, brand is high value tomorrow or like down the line.
Yeah, I think inside of that industry, there's top of funnel and bottom of funnel, and you need to understand what your expectation is going to be on each system that you implement inside your business, because you're going to get different results from different approaches, and you need to understand what that's going to be and temper your expectations accordingly.
Yeah. What is the outcome? And I think even that's like a bit of a shift for many people is, oh, I can actually expect an outcome, like a clear outcome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Okay, Kyle, what's next for you? What are you most excited about, you know, over the next few months, next year? And what are you most interested in going forward?
Yeah, I love growth. And right now we're really fortunate to have a lot of really awesome people inside of our system that have goals aligned with ours, and they're eager to then open their own stores. So super excited to start working towards that. Continue our growth.
What's like the vision? Is there like a vision, like some shiny place in the future, sort of everyone's trying to go?
There probably should be more of a detailed game plan than there is, but no, it really is just about enjoying the process, like I said earlier, and enjoying the process, being in the moment. And
love that. Kyle, before we wrap up with a rapid fire round of questions, is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't, that you feel might benefit a restaurant owner listening?
No, I think you did a great job. It was really fun doing this. I appreciate the opportunity. It was fun.
Well, anytime, sometime we'll have to do it. I want to do more in-person ones. So
that sounds good.
Food for thought there. Okay. All right, Kyle, it's time to wrap this baby up with some rapid fire questions. You ready?
Yeah, hit me.
All right. What's your all-time favorite drink?
It's pretty boring, but Bud Light.
Bud Light. Nice one. Nice one. Okay. What has been your all-time most favorite restaurant experience?
Not sure if you're familiar with the band Motorhead, but we had Lemmy from Motorhead at one of our restaurants, and he and I sat at the bar until 4:30 in the morning with a bottle of Jack Daniels. And yeah, that was definitely number one.
Amazing. Do you have an all-time favorite?
I can read more business books. I don't. So I'm the wrong guy to ask that. That's what I mean about the two different sides of the brain. My business partner could probably have a 3-hour podcast with you just on business books he's read, but I'm not the guy, unfortunately.
Okay. How about all time? Is Motorhead your all time favorite band? You got an all time favorite band?
Yeah, I'd say Motorhead's probably.
Motorhead. Wow. That's awesome. What's your favorite city in the world?
I'll say Vancouver. It's where I live and it's where I started. And I definitely have a lot of passion for that city, but second would probably be Montreal. I love it there.
Yeah. Montreal is awesome. What book, tool, or resource had the biggest impact on your success?
I probably won't recommend this for everybody, but the book that I referenced earlier that launched this whole journey that I've been on was a Reader's Digest. It was just one little blurb and one little book that changed my life. I'm sure it's different for everybody, but that was really impactful for me.
That's the power of reading.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. Kyle, thank you so much for your time. Where can people go? Where do you want people to go to learn more about what you're up to and potentially connect with you?
Yeah, warehousegroup.com. Check us out. But even better, come in store. Come say hi. We'd love to have you.
Yes, I do recommend it. I'm a big L Furniture Warehouse fan. Yeah, so thanks. Go check them out. At any major Canadian city, you should find an L Furniture Warehouse. Is that right?
Yep, we're not there now. Hopefully we're coming soon.
All right, Kyle. Thank you so much. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Guest Getter Podcast, where we help you turn visitors into regulars and regulars into raving fans. If today's episode sparked any questions or ideas about growing your restaurant, why not drop us a line? Text us at 778-400-4915 and let's start a conversation about growing your restaurant and taking it to the next level. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and keep playing offense. Until next time, cheers.